world, and welcome to another episode of Terrifying Tales, the podcast. We are your hosts, Tyler, Sean.
Hello.
And Rachel.
Hey.
That's a good intro. And today we're going to be talking about Vampire again, part two for now, of probably many more. Vampire the Requiem. Sean,
I mean, I got a lot to say about vampires.
Yeah, so Vampire the Requiem is about vampires. They have abilities that are vampire abilities that do vampire things. They drink blood because, you know, vampires. It's really cool. They requiem a lot in requieming things. There's a requisition that requiems. And yeah, I think this podcast is, I think I nailed it. So, you know.
Yeah, I think we can all just go home now.
Yeah, we can go home. I do have a question starting out because questions abound. I know that was there Vampire the Masquerade and Vampire the Requiem? Are they two different things? Like, are they two different? What? I'm confused.
Yes, they are technically both published by the same company, at least originally. They are both about vampires. They are both about the spiritual cost of playing a vampire, but other than that, they are dramatically different games.
Oh, still there, Sean?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, you went quiet. Okay.
Yeah, so, okay, they are dramatically different. I mean, I remember playing, I mean, my only real exposure to this is the video game that came out forever ago, which you were a knight, and then a vampire stole your girlfriend, your betrothed, or whatever.
Oh, wow, that's not even the video game, Rachel, and I thought you were talking about. Wow.
Yeah, no, yeah.
You're so old.
I have
played that game, but that is a Masquerade game. As far as I know, there is no Requiem video game.
Oh, interesting. So, like, what's the difference between that and the other?
Why don't you start, Rachel, by telling us quickly the difference between World and Chronicles of Darkness?
Oh, do we have 2 hours? I was about to ask,
mechanically or narratively? All right, so anyway.
Let's go with narratively.
Okay, well, all right, so to begin with, way back in the early aughts, White Wolf decided that they wanted to bring an end to their World of Darkness line. And at the time, that was the only thing that they were really publishing. And it was getting kind of bloated, especially Vampire, because I sort of alluded to it. You know, there are contradictions in the lore, in part, you know, because one writer was writing something. They hadn't read this one obscure book. And so they wrote what they thought was cool. And it was really cool. And it just contradicted this other cool thing. And so there was just sort of like this narrative weight going on. And so they're like, all right, you know what? Gehenna happens. We're going to start all over again. Yeah. And so that is what gave birth to Chronicles of Darkness. And the original design idea was pretty cool in that. So for as long as World of Darkness had been playing, you know, like the week after the first Werewolf game came out, players have been wanting to do crossovers. But because each World of Darkness game was designed and written to be like its own thing, there was not a whole lot of balance. Because it's like one vampire against a werewolf, the vampire is getting pasted. But then the werewolf goes up against a mage and they get pasted. And then like a true fae shows up and ruins everybody's day. And so the idea behind Chronicles of Darkness was let us have a main core rule book, and that's what they called it, Chronicles of Darkness. And the idea was, okay, here's the base rule set, and then we will have supplementary books, so like vampire, mage, changeling, and all of that. So it was kind of a good idea. Some gamers didn't like it because they didn't like having to buy 2 books to play one game. Laughs in D&D. But yeah, so that is how Chronicles of Darkness got started, and it is dramatically different takes on all of the big splats, so vampires, werewolf, changeling, etc.
Cool.
And now it'll make sense when Rachel explains to us why Requiem is different than Masquerade, which is
I'm sorry?
I said, which is basically everything you just said.
Oh, yeah. All right, so how is Requiem different? I think that the biggest mechanical departure that they made when they were designing Requiem is they got rid of generation, because that core mechanic really defined like the entire world of Darkness, because your generation traced directly back to Cain. And so narratively, you know, vampires fight over, is Cain real? Is he not real? Should we worship him? Should we go destroy him? Mechanically, it all goes back to Cain. Cain is the big answer. And if Cain exists, a whole bunch of other stuff also just have to exist. And so Chronicles got rid of that. And so now instead you have a mechanic called Blood Potency. And it goes up and down over the course of a vampire's unlife. So when your sire first turns you and you're just this little fledgling with no idea what's going on, your blood potency is 1. And then for roughly every 50 years of active vampire life, it goes up by another dot. And your blood potency is sort of like your power stat. So it is still like generation. It defines how much power you have, what your stats are, what your caps are. But as your blood potency increases, you also lose certain freedoms. So now I might get this wrong because it's been a while, but I believe at like blood potency 3 and below, you could feed from animals, and then like 5 and below, you could feed from people. But then once you started getting blood potency, like six or seven around there, you could only start feeding from other vampires. And vampire blood is hella addictive in this setting. So once you get up to this certain level of blood potency, so like you're a 300-year-old vampire, you have to feed from other vampires, which, you know, they may not want to let you do. And then, of course, you become emotionally compromised because the blood bond is still a thing. And so vampires have the option of going into torpor. And you go into torpor for a period of time and your blood potency decays. So you wake up like 100 years later, you're back at like blood potency 2. And I thought that that was a really cool, elegant mechanic to explain, you know, like, oh, I'm making a starting PC. It's a 500-year-old vampire and I can't do shit. Well, it's because you just woke up out of a decades-long torpor. And because of the way they wrote torpor, you know, you just forgot a bunch of stuff. Like, you forgot how to do stuff. You forgot your name. You forgot significant memories. So I really like the way they did that.
Hmm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how they changed the cosmology, which is a big thing, a big difference between the two. Like, the lore.
Yeah, yeah. So they changed the cosmology pretty dramatically because they decided to say, we don't know where vampires come from. So you've got the Lankea Sanctum, who believe that the first vampire was the Roman legionnaire who stabbed Jesus on the cross, and Jesus's blood ran down the spear into this guy's mouth, and he became a vampire. And he's the first vampire. There are no pre-Christian vampires. But then you've got the Circle of the Crone, who's like designed to be the counterpart to the Lankea Sanctum. And they're like, vampires have like always existed. We have evolved alongside humans. And then you have other factions like the Invictus and the Carthians who just don't care.
Hmm. I mean, is there a point to caring? Like, knowing what the truth is, does that mean anything all this time later?
No. And I like how they did that, because again, like, once you sort of mechanically have an answer, that restricts a lot of things that you can do. And so within this system, it's totally fine to be like, vampires started when a Nordic burial rite went wrong. That's where they come from. Okay. And if you as a storyteller want to run with that, like, oh yeah, they're Draugr who just spread, cool, go for it. The game isn't going to tell you you can't on any level.
Hmm. Which was a very big change. They took away the meta plot and said, you make your own, which at the time, a lot of people liked.
Yeah, because like you also had, you would have like Chicago by night, LA by night, Montreal by night, and they were just full of like really complicated political structures. And this is all back in World of Darkness. So you would have like a lot of like named characters, title characters, all interacting in really complicated ways. You know, so if you're running a game set in Chicago, you know, how much should you use Chicago by Night as a guide? And so, yeah, so the Chronicles of Darkness designers were like, nope, nope, not going to do any of that. So I think they wrote like one city book just to demonstrate how the cities mostly organized themselves. But other than that, you could design a big world-shaping global vampire conspiracies all on your own. And there was no other plot to contradict you.
No, Tal, you just said that people liked that at the time. Did they stop liking that, or is it still kind of a thing that everybody's down for?
Well, I think you can kind of tell by how well. I think you can kind of tell by how well each game is doing. Because Requiem is a good game, and it has some good design choices. And I really think that it freed up White Wolf to do mechanical innovation that they otherwise wouldn't be able to. But it's also pretty clear that Requiem was just never able to capture the wider imaginations of players the way that Masquerade had.
Interesting. Wait, so they were given more freedom to do what they wanted, but that like people did less with it, is what you're saying?
Yeah, and I think so the political design of Requiem is very, very tidy. And so you've got the quote unquote Christian vampires going against the quote unquote pagan vampires. And then you have the corporate vampires going against the revolutionary vampires. And then you've got these weird Dracula worshippers who are supposed to be like the fulcrum to balance everything out. Mm-hmm. Which is fun, and they also stripped it down to only 5 clans instead of 13, but then you got like 5,000 bloodlines. So it is fun. The design is good. It was just like, yeah, that's just my sort of feeling, is that the design felt a little too tidy. Like, these are vampires. It should be a little bit messier, and that's kind of why I like the Prude so much.
Yeah, do you know much about the history of how well the game did? I personally remember that, being excited when it first came out, but then I burned out real fast and went back to V20.
Yeah, like I played Requiem, and I have good memories of playing Requiem, and I like ended up with some characters that I really like and remember fondly, but like there's just something about Masquerade, man.
Yeah. But Brood is cool. So tell us about that, since that's going to be in the campaign. You can talk about this as much as you want.
Holy shit. Don't tell me things like that, Tyler. We'll be here all night.
As much as you want within 30 minutes.
Okay. Be like, Rachel, it's dawn. Please shut up. As much as like I've sort of been like, on Requiem, Belial's Brood is the best thing that was ever published for a vampire under the White Wolf imprint by anyone ever.
Yep.
One of the mechanical changes that they did in Requiem was, so in Masquerade, you have to deal with your humanity. And if you lose too much humanity, you become a ravening beast. Now, Requiem still had that, but in Masquerade, they had these things called Paths of Enlightenment, which I think I talked about a little bit, where like you could adopt this totally new alien morality and just like basically hypnotize yourself into thinking that different things were good or bad. And so like a lot of people liked Paths of Enlightenment because it presented an opportunity for some really cool role play. But like some gamers, like it came to be known the path of what I was going to do anyway. So you get on a path, you can justify any monster's action. And so that got frustrating. And so what Chronicles of Darkness did was like, nope, not doing that. Everybody is on humanity. And if you reach humanity, if you reach humanity zero, you're fucked. So what the Brood is it is a collection of vampires who think that you can gain a certain degree of spiritual enlightenment by deliberately and slowly giving up all of your humanity. And so like, it's not just like, well, I guess I'm going to become a serial killer now. It's You have to be very deliberate and thoughtful and sort of like almost like meditative. And you're like, and now I am losing my next dot of humanity. And I am that much closer to whatever enlightenment waits on the other side of humanity zero. And I thought that was really, really cool.
Agree. Your girlfriend in that game, Sean, was not a good person.
Right. I mean, they're vampires, so, you know.
Yeah, and so it divides up into like really cool factions who all interact with each other in very interesting ways because they are monsters. Like, they're still super bad because they're deliberately trying to be like, I am riding this evil bus till the end of the line and then off a cliff. But also, so it's like, if you read Mage 20, you pretty much have a good idea what various New Age movements are all about. Like, if you really want to understand the broad strokes of Wicca, read about the Verbena. Like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you really want to understand Gnosticism, read Belial's Brood. This is one of the reasons I like it so much, is that it is Gnostic all the way through. There's a visual Gnostic pun. Not a pun. I guess just like a signpost. Like, on page one, they're like, this is what this game's about.
You find a loose brick on the wall.
I had a question and I lost it. What was it? How do disciplines work in Requiem as compared to V20? Even though I don't even think they're called the same thing.
Yeah, they're called disciplines. So they work essentially the same way in that you have three in clan disciplines. When you join a bloodline, you get a fourth in clan discipline. And they actually do a mechanic that I really, really like, in that your role for your discipline, it's your attribute plus ability, like normal, but you can also add your discipline dots to the role, which I really like, because it's like, yes, I've spent my entire life studying presence. I know how to make you love me. And
right,
so
that should be more than just power, right? I always thought that too.
Yeah. Maybe I'll house rule that for Sabat.
That'd be cool.
I'll think about it. Yeah. And so the other big mechanical change they did, which they sort of, this is a blanket change across their mechanics, is that in World of Darkness, your base success was a 6, and the storyteller would move that up or down depending on how difficult the thing was that you're trying to do. So like, if you're trying to do something that's like really, really hard, difficulty 9. If you're a mage and you're casting in just the right way, difficulty 4. The change that Requiem made was that your difficulty is 6. It is a blanket 6 across the board, but you might need multiple successes to achieve a thing. And so there are rules for like, I think it was called like a dramatic success or exceptional success. Where like, if you rolled 5 successes, it was like rolling a 20 in D&D, cool stuff happened. And then they kept the botch rules, so you roll no successes and a 1, it's a dramatic failure, terrible shit's going on.
It's still legible, but it's pretty crumbling.
And I remember they tried to bring in a lot of the quote-unquote old clans as bloodlines. How does that work? Explain to people how a bloodline would enhance your clan powers, abilities. Like you said, there's only 5 clans, so but you could be like a Ventru Tremere, basically.
Yeah, so Requiem was being designed at the apex of D&D 3.5's popularity, and a big thing that 3.5 had was prestige classes.
Oh my god, did they do some prestige classes in Vampire?
Yeah, that's basically what they are.
Oh god. Oh god.
So essentially what happens is if your blood potency is high enough, I want to say 6 or 7, don't quote me on that, but it's got to be high, you can found a bloodline. You can found it on anything. And so I think you need to be blood potency 2 to join a bloodline that your sire was a part of, and blood potency 3 to be a member of another bloodline. And like, there's a lot of restrictions on some bloodlines. Like there are some, like one clan, one of the major big 5 clans was called Deva. There's some really cool bloodlines that you can only get into if you're a Deva. And some really cool bloodlines that you can only get into if you're a Ventru. And so in some of the early bloodline books, they had like the Malkovian bloodline, which was an offshoot of Ventru. There was the Toreador bloodline, which was an offshoot of Deva. And yeah, there's just like a lot of masquerade Easter eggs in at least the first edition of Requiem. I'm not super familiar with the second. They don't have brood, that's all I need to know.
So what's like the story element? Do you just go drink somebody else's blood and suddenly you have that line in you? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, like mechanically, that's pretty much all you need to do is have someone initiate you mechanically. And like, yeah, you drink a point of blood from the target bloodline. Although if it's your sire's bloodline, I think you can just manifest it. But like some bloodlines have like really cool initiation rituals. Like, oh God, there's one called, I forget what they are, but their whole thing is suicide. So they pretty much drive you to kill yourself and then you come back as the bloodline.
I thought when you said suicide, you just mix a bunch of bloodlines together and, you know, just kind of drink that. And
yeah,
no, but that sounds cool.
That's another thing an audience person might be thinking is, explain what happens if you join a bloodline and then drink blood from another bloodline.
I think you just get the blood bond. Like there's nothing, once you join a bloodline you can't go back. You can't even like go back to your original clan. You're always that bloodline. Oh, and like the cool thing about joining a bloodline is you get a 4th in clan discipline. And sometimes it's like, oh yeah, you get this other common discipline as your 4th in clan. But sometimes you get this really cool proprietary discipline. Like I played an Anfari once who are just so their restriction. You also get a new clan restriction. Their restriction is they can only feed on people who are high on opiates. Their discipline is all around getting and staying high. Their 5.1 is like, oh, you're dead of an overdose now. Sucks to be you. It is called Blessed Drowning.
Do you know why?
It doesn't work against vampires.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But it works against everyone else. Yeah, it doesn't work on vampires, but it works on everyone else. And vampires still get super high.
Do you know why they didn't carry over Belial's Brood to 2E? I actually have no idea.
No. I do not.
I don't either. Was Requiem the first game in the Chronicles line? I mean, after base Chronicles. Was that the first splat after the Mortal Book?
Yes, I believe Chronicles and Requiem came out simultaneously. And then afterwards came Werewolf the Forsaken, and then Changeling the Lost. I can't remember when the New Mage came out. I can't remember when Geist came out.
I feel like Geist was later in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do remember for a while they had pretty strong Requiem, Forsaken, Lost, and Awakening. No, not Awakening, Ascension. They begin with A, so I was... No, it is Awakening. I keep confusing them. They both start with A. Why did you do that?
Somebody did that on purpose, I'm sure.
I know. They also did Werewolf the Forsaken on purpose, because what's the acronym for that?
When you ultimately run the Requiem campaign on our Tuesday overarching Chronicle of Darkness, are you going to run 1E or are you going to run 2E and just port in Belial's Brood?
Well,
for the sake of the story, it doesn't matter. It's why I thought I'd ask.
Yeah, I think that's something that I would want to touch base with you on in particular, because we're driving this bus. I think it would make more sense to have mechanical cohesion and it's way easier to port Brood to 2e, I think, than it would be to port a 1e game to a 2e game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing with Awakening, is I'm just porting the parts from 1e I want to 2e instead of not. Yeah, I'm using 2e, but I'm taking what I like from the first edition, which is, again, basically the same thing as in your case. It's specific factions.
Yeah, like, I might have to massage some of the powers, but I don't anticipate that being a whole thing, because, like, their powers are all, like, they're supposed to be strange and weird, so.
What do you think about the whole separate book they came out with? For to create basically Blade as in the Requiem walk, line in our Hunter of the Vigil game, the Steve played one, played a Revenant, is that what they're called? I think that's the word they used. It's Revenant and Ghoul book, basically, where you can be born with the bloodline, but you're still alive.
You know, I actually don't know that much about that. So I really got into Requiem when I was doing an organized play LARP, and so that is how I got to play a lot of really cool Chronicles of Darkness games back in, like, I left in like 2006, and so that's when I really stopped
I see,
like, staying updated.
Yeah, this book's pretty new. Came out in 2017. I can talk about that for a second.
Really cool.
I can talk about it for a second and give your voice a break. Making you talk for 40 minutes.
Yes, please.
Actually, I have a question. So.
Oh, no. He's going to make you talk anyways.
No, not. No. Rachel doesn't have to answer this one. So what's a typical, like, vampire game like? Is it just like an angsty Anne Rice novel, or what is it like? Like, what do you do?
If you want me to answer it first to give her a break.
I would. Tyler, I would like to hear your voice.
It is a game of personal horror, so it depends entirely on the characters made by the players. I would work with the characters and offer a couple themes and let them pick one and run with it. And yes, Anne Rice angst, as you described it, would be a possible theme. In V20, there's more to the meta plot, like in Mage of the Ascension. But again, just like in our Mage games, you can completely ignore the meta plot and do anything you want. You can make it as small and personal as you want. Normally, though, your vampire starts out in the modern age, and you have to try to fight and survive the brutal world of vampire politics in basically the end times when the bloodlines are weak and things are fizzling out. You have to claw for power. You have to stay alive. You have to stay unalive is the main theme of V20. For Requiem, it probably is a lot more Anne Rice themed, yeah.
Mm.
What's Rachel say to that?
I will say that even though they are both dramatically different games, a really good, so here's the whole thing, is that people will criticize both Masquerade and Requiem for being, it's superheroes with fangs.
They're both
superheroes with fangs. Okay.
So.
All right, Duran.
There is. There is some truth to that, because the first time that I ever showed up to a vampire, or not, I'm sorry, the first time I ever showed up to a LARP and felt, oh my god, I'm playing a vampire, was a fantasy buffer LARP, where I was the only vampire. And according to the game's mechanics, I walked into game with fatigue, which was a mechanical effect. It's pretty much what you think it would be. And I would stay fatigued until I found a player character who was willing to let me feed from them. And that inflicted a wound, which was pretty serious. And then I had to do it all over again the next day. And so I walk into game, I wake up at game, and my first goal is I need blood. And I really have carried that forward now every time that I run vampire, because I always want vampires to be thinking, where is my next meal coming from? And so, like, vampires should talk about blood the way that we talk about the weather. It is the ambient force that affects their lives. And so for me, a vampire game is a lot about getting feeding territory, holding feeding territory, and the things you have to do to make that happen.
So I just picture like an old video game beat 'em up of just a bunch of vampires going around like, all right, this is our block now, and feeding on those people.
Yeah, it can totally be like that if you've seen Near Dark.
I can tell you in my vampire games, Requiem or To Be 20, I like to get the supplements for ancient times. I like the players to actually start out before the modern era, and I like to do a couple arcs before they get there, specifically around you were turned in whatever era we're starting in, 1800s, 1500s, all the way back to, you know, early medieval period, and say, okay, now after X sessions of time jumps, it's 1986 or 2020. You've been alive for 400 years, and now, even as the player, you have a perspective of you fought and clawed for all those resources and assets for 20 game sessions. Now you're going to care a lot more if I come for them. It makes them feel like vampires, ancient creatures that need blood and will hoard and are jealous of everything. And also, if you do dramatic jumps without telling them how long it is, like, don't tell them how many sessions it's going to be in the 1800s, and then just show up one week and be like, okay, you went into torpor and out to 1983. It also helps jar them for their vampires waking up going, I have no idea how anything works.
Yeah, how does that, like, I mean, do you, is that one of those rules where it's like the shit gets old as you look at cell phones and shit, or does that just get played out through the game itself as you play? Like, oh, that's a computer. Let's learn how to use a computer today.
That's what ghouls are for.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I once played it. This was actually how my brood. This was actually how my brood character got started. Is that she was a computer science major, who had no family and was hired by this one really weird dude to upgrade his computer, his home personal security. She's like, okay, wow, this guy's like super weird and super paranoid, but the money's good, cool. And so she was unbeknownst a ghoul. And then, like, just happens to cross paths with one of his vampire rivals who, like, was going to do a very politically weird thing to be like, I'm calling in a boon, your ghoul's now mine. And because she knows all of his security secrets, like, he couldn't let that happen. And he's like, well, you can't ask for my child, so come here.
Oh.
I like to do another thing too, like Rachel said, emphasizing how important blood is integral. And there's another aspect that for a long time I never even thought of until I listened to podcasts, really good ones by Uncle Yo's the guy's name. He hasn't done any in a long time, but they're really good and soundtrack narrated podcasts, right? They're not live plays, they're like radio plays. But you know how when you're a kid everything takes forever?
Yeah.
And when you're old, you're like, shit, how's it Wednesday already?
Yeah, how is it Wednesday already?
What's that like when you're 500? I love to play the, you don't even know weeks and months pass. And you don't even realize it. Like the perspective of the creature who doesn't understand how his favorite little toy is suddenly old when yesterday they weren't, because a decade passed and the vampire didn't really notice. Time means nothing. That's a fun aspect to play up too. It makes it very macabre. Or better yet, your haven changes and you don't understand why, especially if it's a public place, like you live under a hospital or something.
Oh, that's the best. One of my favorite random combats to throw in a masquerade game is, there's a construction project and they dug up failed shovel heads. Oh no.
Still alive down there, slowly starving. I will talk about the, since we kept talking about it, I will mention the book that we had Steve's character made out of. The book is called Half Damned and was written in 2017. It lets you create Dampiers, Revenants, and Ghouls for Requiem. Basically, you're connected to a clan and you get unique takes on their abilities, and in some cases you actually can create weaknesses in the actual vampires, especially if you're a Dampier, which is Blade. You can actually twist their powers against them, which is fun.
That does sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's a cool little book, Steve. That's how we got Steve. He's like, I'm going to be a vampire in a hunter game. And I'm like, the hunters are going to stake you unless you're Blade. So that's how we found this book.
Yeah. Out of all the Chronicles, I think Hunter the Vigil is my absolute favorite. That's a really well-written game. Like, Changeling the Lost is a very close second.
Yeah. Hunter the Vigil 1 and 2 and Changeling 1 and 2 were probably the easiest reads for me of that series. Like, I don't mean easiest in they're hard to read. I mean, it flowed so logically. I don't know if it's concepts or what.
You know, I know this isn't a Vigil podcast, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit anyway. What I really love about all the other lines, Vampire, Werewolf, is that they're like, oh, we can't tell the humans about us because if they find out about the supernatural, they will get their shit together and murder us. And then you look in the Hunter the Vigil and you have tactics, which is literally mechanical systems for getting your shit together and murdering supernatural creatures.
My players used tactics to defeat an angel, a god machine angel, in a campaign. Shit's effective.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, as we wind down, why don't you tell us a little bit about your devious plans for a Requiem game that I know is very far in the future, but I'm sure you have something in your head.
Yeah, so Belial's Brood is a love letter to Gnosticism, which is all about achieving enlightenment and knowing things and understanding your place in the universe. So who would be an enemy for a Gnostic? Probably someone who takes Thorazine as a holy sacrament. Like, not someone who needs Thorazine, because some people do need those sorts of medicines, and that's perfectly justified. I'm talking about people who don't need it, but take it anyway, because desire is the root of all suffering, and consciousness is the root of desire.
And on that devil face laughing hint, I think we can call this session good. Unless you have any final thoughts, Rachel, you want to get in there?
I think I dropped the biggest bomb I could just there.
I think so, too. And so that wraps up part two of our vampire series, which won't be the end, but we will move on to something else next week. So we actually have to do a further deep dives on any of the World or Chronicle lines. We actually need to line up how we're going to do it. So yeah, look forward to those. Maybe we'll do a session on every clan. That could be intense and take like a year. There are whole podcasts for that. Until then, though, we have to leave you with one final thought.
Oh,
I forgot already because
crap, I did.
Tired.
You guys you record this after I just ran a game. Like, how? I'm not going to remember that you get a thirst.
That's why we do it that way.
Chat was extremely punny today, and I almost burned it down again. Like, just Discord channels are in danger at this point. So,
everybody's on notice. I could, instead of a pun, give you a soul-destroying philosophical question.
I mean, that's...
He's getting the pun either way.
Oh, damn it.
I want to hear the question, though.
All right. You've got to choose one thing to give up for the rest of your life. Sex or music? Which do you pick?
Sex.
Sex.
Music is life for me. I've been playing
Usually
the piano
people
since
get really
I was five.
Mad when I ask.
I mean, I understand why they would, but one is more of life than the other for me.
Yeah, I just need... And, like, I don't even like music as, like... Most people do. I like soundtracks and just sort of noise, like synth noise and stuff. So like that fills the air of my being, and I kind of need that more than I think sex.
Yeah, okay, I can actually give you a philosophical answer. For me, sex is about intimacy and relationships, but music is about emotion. I don't feel anything as strongly as I do when hearing certain kinds of music.
Now I know more about both of you.
Actually, correct. I would not be able to write or do anything without music. Like, I couldn't sit in just null space and do things. I need that background. I need that sort of, and like Tyler said, I need that emotional cue, I guess, to sort of figure things out and move in a direction. So, yeah, I don't think I could live without music.
Sean.
Oh, shit.
What do you call it when people get together at an actual haunted house?
I don't know, Tyler. What do you call it when people get together at an actual haunted house?
Before I answer that, I want to know Rachel's sex or music.
You know, I still haven't come up with an answer. I've been asking people this for like 12 years, and I still don't know.
Valid. Well, in that case, we'll leave you with this. It's called Sean, and I Scream Social. Good night. We'll see you next time.
So bad.
I was going to say Jamboree.
I would accept that, too.
It's so bad. Thank you.